All right. Well, so you know what I'm going to say. Let's get to it. Turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. This is essentially chapter 30 of the book of Numbers. We'll start actually in the second verse, which is technically where the parsha begins, because the last one kind of completes it. You know, sometimes there's a difference of a verse or two between the Hebrew and English renderings of the Bible, and that's partly a lot of times on the chapter designations. But anyway, it says, and Moses spoke unto the heads of Matot, the tribes of the Bnei Israel, and he said, this is the thing which Yahuwah has commanded. So here are the words that are essentially in red. And by the way, I'll introduce this by noting this is one of not just my favorite portions. I got lots of favorites, of course, but it's a portion that I will contend, and I'll say it again here, is probably, when it comes to marriage, one of the very most important in Scripture for husbands and wives to understand. And I find that it's one that is almost never taught in ex-Christianity. They just plain don't know it, but it's vitally important. And as we go through it, it'll, I hope, be clear why that is, for a number of reasons. So it says this, and of course, one of the reasons is because it talks about vows, and a man's word is just no longer his bond. That is a real problem. All right, so when a man vows a vow unto Yahuwah, or he swears an oath to bind his soul with a bond, in other words, he makes a contract, what we would call a verbal obligation, swears to do something. We used to say, you know, you can do business on a handshake with an honorable person. And he binds his soul, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that proceeds out of his mouth. And there's a period there. You would think that would be real straightforward. And again, if you go back and you look at movies from the generation where that was true, it was real simple. A man's word is his bond. You simply do what you're going to do. It says that when a woman, though, vows a vow unto Yahuwah and binds herself by a bond. Now, what is different here? Answer, male and female, he created them. The rules are different. Like it or not, women are held to a different standard by the Creator. And I will contend, I joke about it sometimes, this is because Yah takes better care of women. He's more careful. He actually provides them a layer of covering. And that's the whole point of marriage and one of the things that's being described here. So when a woman vows a vow and she binds herself by a bond, that part is similar so far. But wait a minute, here comes the two cases. There's actually more than that, but two main cases. If she is a youth, she still lives in her father's house, being in her youth, and her father hears that vow, or her bond whereby she has bound herself and her soul, and her father holds his peace at her, in other words, he doesn't say anything, then all her vows shall stand, just like is the case with a man, she shall do. Every bond wherewith she has bound her soul shall stand. But, and here is the big caveat, and it's important, if her father disallows her in that day that he hears it, none of her vows or any of her bonds wherewith she has bound her soul shall stand. And Yahuwah will forgive her because her father disallowed her. So literally, she has an out. The father can say, no, no, sweetheart, you shouldn't have said that. And he can cast it down. Now, if she is married, it says, she has a husband while her vows are upon her, or the clear utterance of her lips wherewith she has bound her soul, then if her husband hears it, whatsoever day it be that he hears it, in other words, he doesn't have to hear it right away, he can hear it later, and he holds his peace at her, just like with the father, then her vows shall stand, and her bonds wherewith she has bound her soul shall stand. But if her husband disallows her on the day that he hears it, just like when she's in her father's house, in other words, then he shall make void her vow, which is upon her, and the clear utterance of her lips, wherewith she has bound her soul, and Yahuwah will forgive her. So again, if she is married, she has a husband, the husband now essentially resumes the role of the father. He has this authority over her vows. On the other hand, it says if it's a vow of a widow, or someone who is a gerasha, in other words, she has been expelled. Sometimes we would say divorcee, but if she's been put out of her house too, then every vow that she, everything with which she has bound her soul shall stand against her. So she's no longer under covering. She's on her own. Just like a man, she'd better do what she says. And if a woman vows in her husband's house or binds her soul by an oath, by a bond with an oath, and her husband hears it and he holds his peace at her, he doesn't disallow her, then all her vows shall stand, and every bond with which she has bound her soul shall stand. Now here's the caveat. The husband has the day that he hears it to make up his mind and do it. Do the right thing. If her husband makes them null and void in the day that he hears them, then whatsoever proceeds out of her lips, whether it were vows or the bond of her soul, shall not stand. Her husband has made them void, and Yahuwah will forgive her. Now, the interesting thing here is this concept of void is it is literally as if they were never spoken. And that's what it means to nullify them or to make them void. It's not that they simply are broken. It's that they never happened. She is forgiven, and we're going to see that there is a there's another level of importance here. Every vow, every binding oath to afflict her soul, her husband, he may let it stand, or her husband may make it void. But if her husband altogether holds his peace at her from day to day, then he causes all of her vows to stand, or all of her bonds which are upon her. He has let them stand because he held his peace at her in the day that he heard them. So if he's going to do it, he had better speak up. He is required to speak up, and he needs to do it then. Now, my common advice is, if it's something which should not have been said, and it's a daughter, in the case of a man who has a young daughter at home, or she's still under his covering, or a wife, he had better do it right then. Don't take a chance of waiting until it's later on and go, oh, sorry, I blew it. If you're going to do it right then. That's the markology. That's my own take on it. But I will contend you don't want to risk forgetting if it's important. But here's the other caveat. If he makes them null and void after he's heard them, then he bears her torahlessness. He bears her guilt. He is the one who takes her fall. And if you think about it, that is precisely what we see in the Garden of Gethsemane with Yeshua and the cup that he takes. So the principle is clear, the principle is consistent, and the principle is vital to understand. And we'll talk more about this when we go through the Midrash, because there's a whole lot of caveats and things that I think are part of the reason why I suggest this is vitally important especially for new married couples to understand, because most of them simply do not. And, of course, it's politically incorrect, but so is just about everything that has to do with marriage in the real way that it was ordained by the Creator. These, it says, are the statutes, ha-hukim, plural. And what does huk mean? Remember, this is a do it because I tell you so. You don't have to understand the reason why it is that the husband has this authority. Truth is, he just does. So these are the hukim which Yahuwah commanded Moshe between a man and his wife, between a father and his daughter, being in her youth in her father's house. All right, the next chapter, 31, says, and Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said, avenge the B'nai Israel of the Midianites. Afterwards, you shall be gathered to your people. So this is going to be one of Moshe's almost last acts. We're going to see that the entire book of Deuteronomy, of course, is his farewell address, which is pretty much his swan song, his last act. So Moshe spoke unto the people, and he said, arm yourselves, men, from among you for the war, that they may go against Midian to execute the vengeance of Yahuwah on Midian. Of every tribe, 1,000, through all the tribes of Israel, shall you send to the war. So the tribes are very big. They're going to pick 1,000 men of fighting age out of each of the 12 tribes. So they were delivered out of the thousands of Israel, 1,000 of each tribe, 12,000 armed for war in total. And Moses sent them, 1,000 of every tribe, to the war. Them, along with, now this is a guy that just got the covenant of peace. This is kind of interesting, isn't it? Going to go to war. Now, I firmly believe he's not going to fight, but he will be there to see what's going on. This is interesting. Pinhas, son of Eleazar, the priest, the Kohen, and he has the holy vessels and the trumpets for the alarm in his hand. So they warred against Midian, as Yahuwah commanded Moshe, and they slew every male. They also slew the kings of Midian with the rest of their slain, Evi, and Rechem, and Zur, and Hur, and Reba, the five kings of Midian. Balaam, remember him? Son of Beor also, they slew with the sword. And this is an interesting way, and this is Becherev, so it's with the sword. And remember, that's different than with the mouth of the sword, Belefi-cherev. And it's an interesting pattern, because we're going to see the singular exception in Scripture here to how this plays out. Because as a general rule, when it's Israel that is doing something to the men of their own tribes, it's with Lefi, with the mouth of the sword. But we'll come back to that in just a second, because we're going to see that exception. All right. Also, it says, the B'nai Israel took captive the women of Midian. and their little ones, and all their cattle, and all their flocks, and all of their goods they took for prey. And in all the cities and the places wherein they dwelt, all their encampments, they burned with fire. So they basically just did it to Midian, destroyed them. They took all the spoil, all the prey, both of man and of beast. And then they brought the captives and the prey and the spoil unto Moshe, unto Eleazar the Kohen, and unto the congregation of the Bani Israel, unto the camp, under the plains of Moab, which are by the Jordan at Jericho. And Moshe and Eleazar the Kohen and all the princes of the congregation went forth to meet them outside the camp. And Moshe, it says, was pissed off. He was wroth. He was really angry with the officers of the host, the captains of thousands and the captains of hundreds, who came from the service of the war. So you got to ask the question. We're going to get an answer. Why? He said unto them, have you indeed saved all of the women alive? Behold, and remember, these are the women that have just been making hubba-hubba and caused all the problems. That's what he's going to tell them. Look, these are the same women that caused the Bani Israel. And here's the key. We didn't know this before. We kind of have if we've read the story. But it turns out, yep, this was through the counsel of Bilaam. So Moshe is telling us, this guy that was this famous televangelist prophet of its day, he is the one that counseled Midian to do this nasty, evil thing. And these women, they were the ones that did it. To revolt, so as to break faith with Yahuwah in the matter of Peor, the lords of Peor. And so the plague was among the congregation of Yahuwah. These are the women that caused the plague. Now, therefore, kill every male among the little ones, even the children, going to kill. And kill every woman that is not a virgin, that has known man, by lying with him. I don't know which ones did the dirty deeds, but we're going to make sure that if they're not a virgin, they're dead. But all the women, children, that have not known man by lying with them, keep alive for yourselves. So they're going to make them into bondservants. Encamp yourselves outside the camp for 7 days. We know why, right? Whosoever has killed anyone, and whosoever has touched any of them that were slain, purify yourselves as required on the third day and on the seventh day, you and your captives. Now as to every garment, all the things that are made of skin, the leather in other words, all the work of goat's hair, all the things that are made of wood, you're to purify those. And Eleazar the Kohen said to the men of war, they went to the battle, this is the statute, the hook of the Torah which Yahuwah has commanded Moshe. However, the gold, the silver, the brass, the iron, the tin, and the lead, everything that can abide the fire, in other words, those things that won't be destroyed by going through the fire, you do. You make it go through the fire, and it'll be clean. Nevertheless, it shall be purified with the water of sprinkling, and all that doesn't abide the fire, anything that would burn it up, in other words, you shall make to go through the water. And you shall wash your own clothes on the seventh day, and then you'll be clean. After that, you can come back into the camp. So Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said, take the sum, count them up, et rosh, do the head count, of all of the prey that was taken, both of man and of beast, you and Eleazar the Kohen, and the heads of the father's houses of the Ha'adah, the congregation. And divide that prey into two groups, two parts, between the men that were skilled in war, in other words, the one that went to battle, those that risked their lives, that did the work, they're going to get a larger share of the booty here, the prize, as it's sometimes called in war terminology, those who went out to battle, and also all the congregation. So there's going to be some for the congregation, half for the men that went out to battle. So they're getting a significantly disproportionately larger share. Levy a tribute, though, unto Yahuwah of the men of war that went out to battle. One soul out of 500, both of persons and of the beeves and of the asses and of the flock. So all of the animals of the various kinds. It's one out of 500 of those for the men who went to battle. Take it out of their half and give it to Eleazar the priest as a portion set apart for Yahuwah. So that's, if you will, the portion for the Kohanim. All of the children of Israel's half, though, you shall take one drawn out of every 50. So it's a much larger cut for the Kohen, of the persons, of the beeves, of the asses, of the flocks, even all the cattle, give those unto the Levites that keep charge of the tabernacle of Yahuwah. So Moshe and Eleazar the Kohen did as Yahuwah commanded Moshe. Now the prey, over and above the booty which the men of war took, was 675,000 sheep. Now this was a big camp and a whole lot of people, if you think about it. 675,500 sheep. and 72,000 beeves, 61,000 asses, and 32,000 persons in all. Now remember, these are just basically virgin girls at this point that are left, of all the women that had not known a man by lying with him. About, and the other half, which was a portion of them that went out to war, was in number 330,000, 7,500 sheep. And Yahuwah's tribute of the sheep was 675. Of the beeves, 36,000, of which Yahuwah's tribute was 72. And the asses, 30,500, of which Yahuwah's tribute was 61. And the persons, 16,000, of whom Yahuwah's tribute was 32 persons. Moshe gave the tribute, which was set apart for Yahuwah, unto Eleazar the priest, as Yahuwah commanded Moshe. And of the children of Israel's half, which Moshe divided off from the men that went to war, the congregation's half was 337,500 sheep, 36,000 beeves, 30,500 asses, and 16,000 persons. So again, we're going to get the portion for Yahuwah that was taken out. Even of the children of Israel, half, Moshe took one drawn out of 50 of man and of beast. He gave them unto the Levites that kept charge of the tabernacle for Yahuwah, as Yahuwah commanded Moshe. And the officers that were over the thousands of the host, the captains of thousands and the captains of hundreds, came near unto Moshe, and they said, look, your servants have taken the sum of the men of war that are under our charge. And you know what? We didn't lose one man. We've brought Yahuwah's offering, what every man has gotten, of jewels and gold, armlets, bracelets, signet rings, earrings, girdles, to make atonement for our souls before Yahuwah. So Moshe and Eleazar the Kohen took the gold of them, even all of the wrought jewels, and all the gold of the gift that they set apart for Yahuwah, of the captains of thousands and of the captains of hundreds, was 16,750 shekels. For the men of war had taken booty, every man for himself. And Moshe and Eleazar the Kohen took the gold of the captains of thousands and of hundreds, brought it into the tent of meeting for a memorial for the B'nai Israel before Yahuwah. Now, the children of Reuben, it says, and the children of Gad. Now, this is a story that's also pretty well known, and it's an interesting way that it's described here. And I think it's I guess you'd even say it's almost enigmatic how it's described. But we'll see that as we go through it. So, children of Reuben and the children of Gad. So those two tribes, they were cattlemen. They had a whole lot of cattle. When they saw the land of Yazer and the land of Gilead, behold, whoa, this was a great place, grasslands, a lot of good places for cattle. Children of Gad and the children of Reuben came, and they spoke unto Moshe and to Eleazar the Kohen and to the princes of the congregation. Here's what they said. Atarot, and Dibon, and Yazer, and Nimron, Heshbon, Eleale, Sebam, Nebo, Baon, the land which Yahuwah smote before the congregation of Israel, is a great place for cattle. And your servants, you probably know this, we have cattle. So they said, if we have found favor in your sight, let this land be given unto your servants for a possession. Do not bring us over the Jordan. Now, let me pause there, because this may not have been the best way to introduce what they were intending. Maybe they did not intend what we're going to find out later happens, but Moses didn't take it well at first. He says unto the children of Gad and to the children of Reuben, shall your brethren go to war? You sit here on your you-know-whats? Why, therefore, will you turn away the heart of the children of Israel from going over into the land which Yahuwah has given them? He has not taken this well. He's thinking these guys are just wanting out of the fight. That's what your fathers did when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land. They went up into the valley of Eshcol. They saw the land. They turned away the hearts of the B'nai Israel so that they shouldn't go into the land which Yahuwah had given them. And you know what? You remember? Yeah, Yahuwah's anger was kindled in that day, and he swore, and he said, you know what? Not one of these men that came up out of Egypt from 20 years old and up shall see the land which I swore unto Abraham, Isaac, and unto Jacob, because they have not wholly followed me, except for Caleb, son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, and Joshua, son of Nun, because they have wholly followed Yahuwah. So Yahuwah's anger, this is Moshe continuing, he's kind of torqued. It was kindled against Israel. And Yahuwah made them wander to and fro in the wilderness for 40 years. All of that generation, until they had, those that had done evil on the side of Yahuwah, till they were all consumed. And behold, here you are, rising up in your father's stead, a brood of sinful men, to augment again the fierce anger of Yahuwah towards Israel. He's not having this. For if you turn away after him, he will again leave him in the wilderness, and so you will destroy all the people. Now, the question, and this is the reason why I think the description of the anger is appropriate, were they really intending that? Were they, and maybe we're supposed to conclude that's what they were going to do, but they're backing down real quick here after this. So they came there and they said, hey, look, we'll build sheepfolds here for our cattle and cities for our little ones, but we ourselves, no, we're ready. We're armed. We're going to be ready to go out armed before the B'nai Israel until we've brought everyone into their place. And our little ones, they need to stay here in the fortified cities because of the inhabitants of the land. We will not, however, return to our houses until the B'nai Israel, every man, has inherited his inheritance. Because we will not inherit with them. In other words, we're not looking for our place on the other side of the Jordan. We're happy here and forward because our inheritance has fallen to us on this side of the Jordan eastward. All right, so Moshe is listening. Again, it does sound, I mean, he's a good judge of character. I think he was rightfully saying, you guys had better not be trying to do what I think you're going to do. And response, no, we're not only going to go out, we're going to lead the troops here. We're going to go out first. We'll be the point of the spear. So Moshe said to them, okay, if you will do this thing, if you will arm yourselves to go out before Yahuwah to the war, and every armed man of you will pass over the Jordan before Yahuwah until he has driven out his enemies from before him, and the land be subdued before Yahuwah, and then you return afterwards, then you shall be clear from before Yahuwah and before Israel, and this land shall be unto you for possession before Yahuwah. All right? So that's the deal. You go over armed, you lead the pack. And if you do all of that, and every man gets his peace, like you've already said, then you return, great. But if you will not do so, behold, you have sinned against Yahuwah. Now, notice what we've just finished talking about. Numbers chapter 30. Every man, you are to do as you say you're going to do. Isn't it interesting? Immediately, we get an example. These are men that have said, all right, we're going to go to battle. We're going to go to battle until every man gets his peace. Then we'll go home. That's the deal. If you will not do so, behold, says Moshe, you've sinned against Yahuwah, and know that your sin will find you. Go ahead, build your cities for your little ones and sheepfolds, and do that which has proceeded out of your mouth. Very same words from that first chapter in this Parsha. And the children of Gad and the children of Reuben spoke unto Moshe, and he said, thy servants will do as my Lord commands. Our little ones, our wives, our flocks, all of our cattle, we'll leave them here in the cities of Gilead. But your servants will pass over every man that is armed for war before Yahuwah to battle, as my Lord says. So Moshe gave charge concerning them to Eleazar the priest and to Joshua, son of Nun, and the heads of the father's houses of the tribes, the Matot of the B'nai Israel. And Moshe said to them, if the children of Gad and the children of Reuben will pass with you over the Jordan, every man that's armed to battle before Yahuwah, and the land shall be subdued before you, then you shall give them the land of Gilead for a possession. But if they won't do it, won't pass over you armed, then they shall have possessions among you and the land of Canaan. Now the children of Gad and the children of Reuben answered, and they said, as Yahuwah has said unto your servants, so we will do. Notice, it's about as clear as it could possibly be in here. Here's the deal, and twice now, that's what we're going to do. So there's no doubt about what was spoken, what was said, and what is to be done. We will pass over armed before Yahuwah into the land of Canaan, and the possession of our inheritance shall remain with us beyond the Jordan. So Moshe gave unto them, even unto the children of Gad, and unto the children of Reuben. And here we see this first addition here, the half-tribe of Manasseh. So if you look at your Bible maps, you'll see this. Half of the tribe of Manasseh decides they like this side of the Jordan too. The other half goes across later. So it's Manasseh, son of Joseph. The kingdom of Sihon is going to be given to them, king of the Amorites. And the kingdom of Og, king of Bashan, in the land according to the cities thereof, with their borders, even the cities of the land round about. And then we're going to hear, this is essentially the way that the portion ends, with kind of a wrap-up of the various cities that are going to be in their possession. Children of Gad built Dibon, and Ataroth, and Aror, and Atoth Shofan, and Yazer, and Yogbaha, and Beth Nimrah, and Beth Haran, fortified cities, and folds for sheep. And the children of Reuben built Heshbon, and Eleah, Eleah, Leh, and Kiriat Ataim, and Nebo and Baal Meon. Their names have been changed. And Sibma, and they gave their names unto the cities which they built. Children of Machir, the son of Manasseh, went to Gilead, and they took it, and they dispossessed the Amorites that were there. And Moshe gave Gilead unto Machir, the son of Manasseh, and he dwelt there. And Yair, the son of Manasseh, went, and he took the villages thereof, and he called them Havot Yair. And Nobah went, and he took Kenath and the villages thereof, and he called it Nobah, after his own name. And with that, the Torah portion ends. And again, not only a historical insight, but an example of the very concept of a man's word is his bond. You will do. And they did, as they said they would do.
And at this point, folks, I have an admission to make. I really don't like the fact that Matot and Masai gets combined into a double portion all too often, because I really think Matot needs a lot of extra time. And actually, there's a lot of stuff in Masai that is, stuff that we've talked about before and gone over before that does not mean it's not important, and it certainly ends up the Torah portion as well. So what I'm going to do is abbreviate a bit of it, simply because I do want to spend more time on the first part, and we'll talk about some of that in more detail during the Midrash tomorrow.